Welcome to Holy Family Radio. I'm your host, Deacon Jim Thorndale. We're here at the studio, and we're going to be talking about another journey in living the Catholic life. You know, sometimes we think about living the Catholic life, maybe we go to church on Sunday, we maybe get married, maybe have a family, we continue to practice our Catholicism as best we can and for what we know. But do we ever think about the young men and women who take that to the next level, who have been on this journey as in living a Catholic life with their parents, but somewhere along the way, God says to them, you know, I have a particular calling for you, and your journey is going to look a little bit different than your brother or your sister or your mom or your dad. It's going to be a journey that's going to take you to another dimension in your Catholic faith. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the journey of a particular right today of a young man who has decided that the Lord is calling him on a really beautiful journey of entering into the priesthood. But this is unique because we have many young seminarians and beautiful seminaries all around the country who are being formed as young men to really rise up, O men of God, and be leaders in our church who will bring other Catholics into a complete formation of who they are in our Catholic faith. But this is different because this seminary that this young man is going to be attending is called Our Lady of Guadalupe Seminary, and it was established by Pope John Paul II in 1988. Why is this different? We're going to talk about that because this really is a beautiful journey into a really deep mysticism of our church, a deep mystery of the church at the altar. Again, I'm pleased to have Michael Coy with me. I'm going to be the young man going to the seminary, and I have Mike Tober, who's the DRE, Director of Religious Education at Sacred Heart. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Deacon. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here. You know, did I miss something about this? Because this really is unique, is it not? This journey Michael is going to be going on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's this place is one of its kind in the world, what it does. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that a little bit because, you know, people are wondering, why is this so different than other seminaries? But before we do that, I want to get some background on Michael Coy because this is important because formation is everything. You know, we look at this and what would cause a man to decide to leave his mother and his father and cling to the Lord and cling to his bride? Let's talk about that, Michael.
All right.
Born and raised Catholic.
Yeah, born and raised Catholic. I was born and raised in Muskegon, Michigan.
Okay.
I grew up, I wasn't the strongest Catholic. You know, I didn't, it's kind of going through the motions a lot of the times. So went to church sometimes.
When you say we went to church sometimes, were your parents practicing Catholics?
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I transferred.
Not to disparage.
Yeah.
No, not to disparage.
Yeah. Most certainly. Yeah. I transferred to Muskegon Catholic Central from Winona Shores in seventh grade, really to win a state championship in football, which I went to.
You're big enough for that.
Yeah. I went to Catholic Central. In my ninth grade year, I had a pretty profound conversion. I started going to confession regularly.
Before you go any farther, when you say you had a profound, you know, a conversion.
Yeah.
What was it? I mean, people need to know that.
It wasn't, it wasn't St. Paul knocked off my horse, but it was, really, I found out that I couldn't receive the Eucharist in a state of mortal sin. You know, something that's so evident, at least now, but I was kind of knocked off my feet when I found that out. And I'd been doing that for a long time. And so I made the deliberate decision to go to confession. The first time in my life, it kind of took the onus on myself. And I went in there, I laid my sins before God, and you know, all the chains were broken, and I felt a real change in my life. And after that, I started praying the rosary every day, started, you know, going to mass every Sunday, just doing, you know, stuff that, you know, a practicing Catholic ought to do. And from there, it kind of snowballed into a devout love of the Lord and His Holy Church.
Yeah. Before we start getting phone calls in on this conversation, no, Paul was not on a horse. There's no mention of that, but that's
he was on his way to Damascus.
He was on his way to Damascus. Yeah. But just so you know, we're just having a conversation here, but the emphasis is really on Paul being knocked down. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, you were knocked down.
Oh, yeah.
And so this start of this conversion was the beginning of your understanding that God may be calling you something greater?
Yeah, in high school, I felt, you know, I talked to the vocations director. I was discerning, seminary life with the diocese. But then I met a girl, and then my plans changed.
It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And so after I graduated from Muskegon Catholic, I went down to Benedictine College with my girlfriend.
Okay.
Played football down there for 2 years, studied theology and philosophy and Latin. And then towards my sophomore year down there, I started going to Latin Mass more regularly with the Society of St. Pius X. Me and my girlfriend broke up kind of at the same time I started going to Latin Mass. And the more I went to that and was nourished by that spirituality, I could start to see myself doing this for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And so, after that, I decided to, if this is what God's calling me to do, I can't keep going to school here. I need to, kind of change my plans. So, I left school. I've been working the past year to pay off my student loan debt because, you can't enter this particular seminary with any personal debt.
Okay.
And for some more discernment as well.
Right.
And Tober was very integral with that, especially with leading me out of the Society of St. Pius X into the Fraternity of St. Peter.
Yeah.
And now here I am. Yeah.
Well, let me go back, because it's always interesting, these journeys, because they all take their own twist, don't they, Mike?
They sure do.
I got two mics here, so Mike, you're going to be Mike. When you hear Mike, it'll be Mike Tober. When you hear Michael, it's going to be Michael Coy. How's that? That way they'll know who's speaking.
Yeah.
But Michael, I want to go back to you because you met this girl.
Yeah.
Were you two practicing Catholicism?
Oh yeah, It was a holy relationship.
But something started to inspire you in a different direction rather than about a single life or living for the Lord.
Oh yeah. That experience again with traditional Catholicism, its emphasis on the sacrifice of Calvary. I mean, that's such a focal point in the Latin Mass, and just to think that I could enter into that mystery day after day to offer up the one redeeming, renewing sacrifice. I mean, it makes my hair stand up on my neck. It's something that I can't even comprehend.
Yes, it's amazing.
Oh yeah,
I'm gonna go over to Mike right now because I know Mike, you were in. So we're gonna get more into the seminary and all that and talk about what it's going to mean and what the difference is.
Yeah.
But you've been instrumental in Michael's journey. I understand.
I was unaware, really, to the depth of that until I was able to read the biography he had to do for the seminary. So, there's much that goes on in a young man's life. You just don't know. At the time I was the campus minister at Muskegon Catholic Central. So I was working there, involved in hundreds of young people's lives. And so the depth and the whole panorama of his story was really unknown to me until recently, until he came and we had that faithful 3-hour and discussing his desire to enter the priesthood.
So people know who they're listening to also from Mike Tober. Give us a little bit of your background. You were born raised Catholic?
I was okay. I'm a cradle Catholic.
Okay.
I took my own route, also had a massive conversion in my life. That's for another day. But I worked in the trades, installing car washes and spot-free rinse systems, and had a conversion, went to Franciscan University, did net ministries, got a theology degree, and ended up working for Father Tony Vinovich in Spring Lake, at St. Mary's in Spring Lake, as a youth minister, in my late 20s, and then eventually on to Muskegon Catholic.
Did you ever in your wildest dreams conceive of yourself being a youth minister in your younger years?
No.
No.
No, not at all. Actually, there's times I think back at those years and I think, oh my gosh, what was I doing?
What was God thinking?
He thinks perfect things and he leads our life in a perfect way. So,
Well, I just want people to have a sense and a taste for who you are also, because that's important, because the reality of your own life and looking back is instrumental in helping young men like Michael to find their way.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
For the last 4 years, I've been working at Sacred Heart, and I'm one of the masterminds behind the Authenticum Lecture Series, and that's in some way how I met Father Robert, and then the rest is history. Now I'm there, just working full-time.
So you've been there 4 years. So was Michael one of your students when you were there at Sacred Heart?
Oh, yeah. Well, not Sacred Heart. He was one of my students.
Muskegon.
He was in my religion classes his freshman year and his senior year.
Oh, yeah. He was at my senior year was his last year at Catholic Central.
Okay. Yeah. Did anything stick out in your mind on Michael at that time?
Oh, yeah. I watched Michael go from middle school Michael, the jolly big kid with quick hands. He had really graceful, quick hands on the basketball court. Loved sports. His peers respected him, but there was a change about around your freshman year. And he obviously began taking his faith more seriously and living it boldly. I remember standing in the lunchroom and watching Michael, his freshman year, bless himself before he ate.
Wow.
No other student did. Things like that externally start happening. You go, there's something going on in that young man's life. And he got involved in our ministry outreach. Mm-hmm. He was on the team that did retreats.
Yep.
He formed a group that would pray the Liturgy of the Hours.
Beautiful.
And so he obviously started truly practicing his faith and actively evangelizing his peers. Yeah.
Michael, I'm going to go back to you because you're talking about this conversion you had.
Yeah.
And when you found out that you couldn't receive the Eucharist if you're in a state of mortal sin.
Yeah.
If you really weren't doing much practicing, why did it matter?
That's the mystery. I don't know. God's grace. It's crazy. I don't know. I asked myself that question. Why this? You know. But you know, praise God that it happened that way. And again, I talk about it. It was really a perfect storm because I went to that confession, and it was the very beginning of Lent. So I said, okay, I'm going to pray the rosary every day for Lent. And 6 years later, I'm praying the rosary every day still. And you know, I had Tober's class, and it was the first encounter I had with real Catholicism to a certain extent. We were reading, you know, Aristotle, Aquinas.
Yeah.
We were reading the saints. You know, just the class was our Catholic faith, so it was a real broad, just kind of overview of different. We talked about everything in the church, and to hear that really satiated the desires that I was that were burning in my heart.
Yeah.
So, yeah, oh yeah.
Well, I would also suggest too that I had a formed conscience at that time. At least you were aware that something wasn't right in your life.
Oh yeah.
And because of that conscience you had begin to form, you responded to God. Positive. I mean, some people would have said, "So what?"
Yeah.
And walked away from that whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
But you took it very seriously.
Oh yeah, and it was kind of weird because again, I went to confession when I, you know, before I received communion, and the two times they make us go, they made us go to Catholic Central. But I mean, I didn't even know like where to go. I decided to go to confession, and then I didn't actually get there until a month later.
But you knew you had to go to a priest, right?
I knew I had to go to that guy. I had that down. I didn't even know where to go, and it was that whole month where I went to Mass and didn't go up to receive communion. That was just an extremely interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
To just make that conscious decision not to, because you know, recognize my own sinful self. And the way I was, you know, got funny looks. So why aren't you going up to, you know, with everybody? That was just, it was very interesting to observe. And it was very formative, too, I think. Yeah.
You know, that I've said it before and I'll say it again, too, because we live in a world now, and unfortunately in our Catholic Church, when we diminish the sacrament of reconciliation, we diminish the Eucharist.
Oh, yeah.
And you were seeing that.
Oh, they're definitely intimately bound, no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. And all of a sudden you're having this sense that I can't do that any longer because to do that is to my own detriment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what St. Paul said, you drink and eat your judgment upon yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 So thank you for responding to that, too. That's important. I'm going to go back to Mike here again, because as we're on this journey, and we're going to start talking about the difference in the seminary in just a minute, but I think it's important that we're getting a sense of who both of you are, and really for Michael and his journey to this point, because this is huge. I mean, this is really a life-altering decision. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is forever going to be, should you decide, you have decided to go and go through this, once you're ordained forever.
Oh, yeah.
This is not just I'll give it a try.
You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's important.
Yeah.
So, Mike, when you have these young men in your hands and you're help forming them, do you talk about vocations?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I think that, if you work in any type of ministry in the church, you have to find organic ways to reach out to the people and suggest, you know, from time to time. Sometimes it's just covering vocations in general. But I think if you're really involved in their lives, then you start noticing certain things. And you have to just be willing to approach a young person. Interestingly enough, for Michael, I never really did that. I never went to Michael and said, hey, you think about the priesthood? You should be a priest. Now, Sister Mary Christina of the Holy Eucharist out in Parnell, her ninth grade year, she was praying longer in the church. And I remember specifically walking up to her and saying, you know, do you ever think about the religious life? And now she's a Descale Carmelite.
Yeah.
You know, so those things bear fruit. And we're just called to plant those seeds.
Exactly.
Michael was a different route because this stuff was going on. And, you know, he had the girlfriend in high school. And you don't want to pressure a young man either. You don't want to, obviously he was living his faith. There's no doubt about that. But the type of struggle and the depth of that conversion and that experience for him it was really beautiful for me to, again, read that biography and say, wow, all I did was provide some Aquinas.
All I did was,
you know, read some church fathers with them and also I think let them explore the faith without making them feel guilty about their questions. I've always relied on that in my classes, that young people they're affected by this culture, they need to ask. And then we just need to answer honestly and let the chips fall where they are at the church.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Michael again, too. Michael, you have other siblings?
I have one little sister, Molly.
One little sister, Molly.
10-year-old. Oh, yeah. She's okay.
The reason I ask that, too, is because this is really goes to the very crux and the heart and soul of many parents. You know, we live in a world today where our families are getting smaller.
Mm-hmm. Except mine.
Yeah, except yours.
You come from a large family.
Mine's growing right now. We just had our fifth baby.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
That is wonderful to hear because you are a practicing Catholic. But what's happening is these smaller families, sometimes parents aren't willing to give up their son.
Yeah.
They want those grandchildren.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they want that legacy to continue because we don't have large families anymore. Mm-hmm. So they feel they're going to miss something. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to your parents because here you were dating a woman. I'm sure they probably thought, oh, thank God you're going to have we're going to have a daughter-in-law and we're going to have grandchildren and all this kind of stuff that the world expects. And all of a sudden you say, wait a minute, I'm going to have children, but they're going to be in my parish.
Yeah.
They're going to be in my family.
Yeah.
How did they take that?
By and large, they're very supportive of my vocation. It wasn't this, no son of mine's going to be a priest, nothing like that. They were very, very supportive. My dad made a few joking, things. Oh, my namesake's, what's going to happen to it? And then, I responded, we should have more kids, That's what, ultimately.
Not too late, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, precisely. Yeah. No huge problems there.
Yeah. But that's important because you have to have your parents supporting that too because it's a hard journey otherwise.
Sometimes they don't.
Yeah, I know.
Sometimes they don't. And I think that's where the reliance, the good discernment and the reliance and trust in God's call. Because sometimes we know plenty of saint histories where the parents, they didn't. They tried everything they could to keep their child. And some of them are great saints.
Oh, yeah.
And that happens today too. And sometimes God calls. And the point is to listen to God and to listen to his call. And if you're unsure, then just investigate it.
Yeah.
Just find out, is this really you? And, of course, the ideal is to have mom and dad say, we're ready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go, do it. But that's not always the case either.
Yeah. You know, it's the greatest thing that parents can give the church is one of their sons or daughters to go into a vocation.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what a gift that is, too. Our children are all gifts, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And God will make the decision and hopefully will respond in the decision that he'd like us to do and make that call. Mm-hmm. But going back to Michael again now, when you finally discerned that you think the vocation of priesthood is going to be for you, you've probably seen a lot of the traditional seminaries around.
Yeah.
And have you gone to any of them?
There's at least in the English-speaking world, there's three big ones. And there's the Fraternity and Our Lady Guadalupe Seminary. There's the Institute of Christ the King. They have an apostolate in Detroit.
Okay.
And then there's St. John Cantius. And they do both the ordinary form and the extraordinary form.
Okay.
There's a few monasteries, traditional monasteries. But considering my experience with the Society of St. Pius X and coming out of that, it almost seemed natural to look into the fraternity because, it was founded from the Society of St. Pius X after the illicit consecrations in 1988. And so it just felt very natural to investigate this place first and foremost. And, it's been very, very fruitful, very rewarding. Yeah.
Have you obviously visited Our Lady of Guadalupe Seminary?
Yes, twice. Yeah.
Tell us about that. What was it first like when you went in there?
I'm sorry,
I should be more specific. First of all, what differentiates Our Lady of Guadalupe from a traditional seminary?
From a traditional seminary.
Yeah,
I got you. From like the diocese.
Yes.
Okay. There is no distinction between major and minor seminary.
Okay.
All 7 years of formation are done there in Nebraska.
Okay.
It retains the traditional minor orders. So next year, if I'm, still in the program, I'll receive clerical tonsure. So they'll cut off 5 pieces of my hair and I'll receive the collar and the cassock and that'll be my dress for the rest of my life. And then you receive the minor orders of porter, lector, exorcist and acolyte. And then about midway through your 6th year, you'll receive, you become a subdeacon. That's the beginning of the major orders.
Okay.
And that's the point of no return, if you will.
Yeah.
And then you receive deacon and subdeacon. So it's got that those traditional orders are still maintained there. The academic formation is thoroughly rooted in Aquinas. Everything from your first year of spirituality through your philosophy through your 4 years of theology. That's the focus of the Summa and his thought.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Are you up for the challenge?
We'll see. God willing. Yeah. Yeah. God willing.
I think you are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pretty good.
I think you are. So let's go back to the first time you visited the seminar.
Yeah.
What was that like? I mean, you're really kind of getting your feet wet in this.
I mean, yeah, it was kind of daunting because, again, I had left the leaving the decision to drop out and pursue God's will was it was a big decision. I caught, if anything, I caught a lot of flack for that.
When you say drop out, what do you mean by that?
When I dropped out, I did 2 years at Benedictine, and then I dropped out of school to pursue this this vocation, and you know, that was a big decision. A lot of my family members were wary of that, you know, you're never going to go back and things. You know, I heard these things and I was aware of these things. So, you know, I was pretty nervous going to, you know, what if I don't like it, this or that. But, you know, I was careful just to not, you know, I don't want to stake my entire existence on liking it, getting ordained. Right. You know, if this is God's will for me, he'll let me know. But if it's not, then I'm not going to be happier and it's not going to be good for me. So, you know, I was pretty nervous. But and I got there and I remember going into, they were chanting sext at the time in this gorgeous, gorgeous church. It was built in 2010. It's built for the Latin Mass and it's built for the chanting, the hours, the acoustics, everything was just, and hearing all these, you know, 80 young men versed in the sacred, you know, the traditions of sacred music and the Latin, just hearing that absolutely blew me away. That was, you know, when I heard those guys chanting, I knew this is the place for me.
Yeah.
And that just blew me away. Oh, yeah.
Mike, have you been to that seminary?
I've never been to that seminary. Okay. No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk more about helping young men discern these things too in a minute, but I'm going to go back to Michael because you were there at the seminary.
Yeah.
Were you, somebody guiding you along and showing you?
So your first visit, it's extremely informal. You basically, they give you, you get your room, they give you your arboreum, your daily schedule, and you basically just follow along and you do what you want. I met with the first year master, Father Lawrence, for an hour. We just talked about vocations and whatnot, but really you're just kind of living the daily life.
Okay.
And then after that, when I left there, I started my application, and this was a very in-depth application.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It cost about $1,000 and 100 hours of my time, just all the travel and everything that went into it. Yeah, I felt like they knew more about myself than I knew, you know. But, yeah, after that, you know, then I got approved to come down for the vocations retreat, and that was the very end of May, and then that was very structured. You went there, you interview, they put you in front of a panel of priests. They asked you questions, and my questions were pretty much based off of my biography. And it was my first silent retreat ever, so I spent 3 days in absolute silence. And so that was very good for me.
See, that would kill me.
Oh yeah.
Oh no, not me. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, then we listen to talks. They have different priests give talks, you know, on the vocations, on celibacy, on the history of the fraternity, the charism of the fraternity, things like that. So you get a better idea. That was very structured. And then a week after I got back from that, I got my acceptance letter in the mail. So.
Obviously, they don't accept everyone.
No, I think they told us that 44 guys at least initiated the application, and only about half the guys actually were there. So they told some people apply later or please don't apply. And I'm not sure actually how many guys on our retreat will be there in September. I talked to a few of them, you know, through Facebook and whatnot. But they try to make it a little more exclusive with the application, so they have a higher retention rate through the seminary. And then really that's only 40-50% from your first year through your seventh year.
For retention.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, from the sounds of when you sat in front of those priests, that was what they call probably your first scrutiny.
Oh, yeah, precisely. Yeah. And I was the very, of all 23 applicants, I was the very first one to get in there. So I got it done, you know, out of the way with it at the very beginning, but then I had to agonize over the questions, how I answered and stuff like that.
Of course. But, you know, and those are important because, you know, there's no shame in finding out that you're not being called.
Oh, yeah.
I think people have to understand that this whole process is meant for the scrutinies, is meant to determine if it's a calling rather than a want.
Yeah, that's right.
I just want to be a priest. Well, that's that might not be enough to sustain it.
They were very careful to say, you know, discerning a vocation is both an internal and an external matter. And this is, you know, you're discerning your vocation, but they're discerning your vocation for you. And then, you know, they tried to make clear that there is salvation outside of the fraternity of St. Peter.
Right.
That not everybody's called to be a priest here, that you might be called to a different order or for a diocesan life or what have you. But, yeah, they tried to emphasize that you know, this isn't necessarily for everyone, and that's okay.
You know, the reason I say it, and I'm going to mention my cousin Paco's name right now because he is my first cousin, homiletics professor at Sacred Heart Seminary. The man went through seminary in Monterrey, Mexico, 4 years.
Oh wow!
And he was going to be ordained, but he met a woman, and this woman was coming out of a order of nuns, mm-hmm. and they fell in love and have three beautiful children now. He discerned that as close as he was, God wanted him to have a family. So the reason I bring that up is because sometimes we can go through that whole process and God will still say, you know what? I have other plans.
Yeah, they said, you know, some people are called just to enter seminary for the 2 or 3 years because, you know, the time you spend there will make you a better Catholic.
Oh, absolutely.
And then that was one of my first impressions of this. Everything aside, this place, just a great place to pursue sanctity.
Absolutely.
And no matter what happens, I'm going to be a better Catholic for having endeavored to do this.
It's going to form you according to the church teachings, too. It'll be powerful formation for you, as it was for my cousin, because he is totally formed in his Catholic walk, mm-hmm. and a great leader in the Catholic Church. So, you know, when you see these things, you realize that it's never a waste of time.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I'm going to suggest you're going to make it, but I'm just saying that we really have to be very open, saying, you know, we listen to God's, we journey with Him. It's always a journey. I've been trained as a spiritual director, and I tell people everybody's on a different journey, mm-hmm. and their own time, their own place, and where God wants them to be, that's where you'll end up being the happiest, too. So,
precisely.
So I'm going to go back to Mike here because, you know, we talk about vocations, mm-hmm. And we talk about listening to God's call. I'm sure sometimes in your catechesis and your teaching, you must tell people about listening to God's call for them and discerning it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, without a doubt.
But how do we train young men and women to listen?
Prayer. Mm-hmm. Prayer. If you don't pray, then you won't hear God.
Yeah.
And if you give up on the struggle of prayer, then you give up on God. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. There's no magic solution. There's no magic formula. It's you have to put yourself and provide the time to sit and be quiet and talk to God and listen to Him.
Yeah.
It's really that simple. And if things start happening in your life or movements in your heart that you're unsure of, then you need to seek good spiritual direction.
Yeah.
There's no that's it. That's the equation. And it's the consistency of that over the span of your life. Even married couples, my wife and I, we each take time every year for us to be apart, mm-hmm. at different times of the year and go spend a few days in quiet.
Renew.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. in prayer. And that strengthens our marriage. It strengthens our family life. If you don't spend the time in prayer, you will never know what God wants for you.
I'm going to throw a suggestion or a question out for both of you because I think it's important. You know, we live in a very noisy world. Mm-hmm. I mean, here we are sitting in the studio wearing headphones. I see young people today with earphones in there. They're mm-hmm. listening to their radios or their iPods or whatever. And there's always noise going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. Somehow we have to train our youth to take them out of their ears and listen to God. Mm-hmm. You know, again, how do we do that?
Well, I mean, there's various ways to do it. My years in working with youth, I just provided opportunities to take them away, whether it was to a monastery, whether it was on a camping trip, whether it was somewhere. But wherever we went, there was no phones, no radios. Mm. It was time to be away and let some of that purge. In my experience now with adults, I do the same thing in the parish. You know, I think about that all the time because it's just not the young people. It's also the adults.
Yeah.
And, you know, what can I do each year to provide multiple opportunities for people to step away and re-encounter Christ, work on their relationship with Christ? And that's it. Yeah. Again, there's really no magic solution. Mm-hmm. And it's not fun and games either. There's no secret paradigm.
No. Mm-hmm.
It is just like Christ. People will be interested, like John, you know, where are you going? He said, well, come and see.
Yeah, follow me.
Yeah, just come and see. And he, John remembers that moment. Whether you're a youth minister, whether you're a deacon, whether you're a pastor, or a bishop, a lowly DRE like me, all of those, we're in some way, we're all in that boat.
Yep, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And it's
we're out in the storm.
We are. And we have to think about our audience. We have to think about the people we're ministering to, where they're at. Whole number of factors, but when it's all done, it's all the same. Yeah. Creating a space and opportunity for people to tune out of the world, tune back into God, and then make their resolution.
Michael, did you live in a noisy world at one time?
Yeah, a little bit. I like to add just how conducive the traditional Catholic spirituality is to this this silence of prayer. We talked before the show started about the beautiful nuptial mass they had at Sacred Heart on Saturday with all the fantastic singing. But yesterday we had low mass, and it was an hour and a half of silence. And I think it's just as countercultural in a sense. It's hard to stay focused. It's getting hot or I'm uncomfortable or my knees start hurting. But just to force yourself just to be there and to pray. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's definitely the Latin Mass helps with that. And the seminary life. I mean, they observe grand silence after 10 o'clock each night. It has an atmosphere of a monastery almost, it seems like. And yeah, that's essential to growing in your spiritual life, most definitely.
Yeah, there seems to be in the church quite often a mistaken notion about active participation. Mm-hmm. And so even if you move away from the world, we can look at this, how the world sort of affected the church sometimes too. Like active participation means just doing something, mm-hmm. lots of loud stuff or... Mm-hmm. But that's not how we work as humans. It's only half of it. We do things externally and we do things internally. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. sometimes the internal is even more active, especially when you think about when God works. He works the strongest when the soul is contemplating. Yeah. And that's God's action. And that's not loud. It's not verbose. It is that happens when a person allows their soul to become the living sanctuary of the Almighty God. You don't see a lot of stuff going on externally, but there's more active participation mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, yeah.
And, whether it's the extraordinary form, which mm-hmm. Michael's going to have the opportunity to be educated in, informed in, but John Paul too said it throughout his papacy. Numerous times he reminded people there's got to be more silence.
Mm-hmm.
And the times, even in the ordinary form of the Mass, where maybe the choir singing something, mm-hmm. sometimes it's enough for us just to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay too. That's active too. And, mm-hmm. and it's a both and. Catholicism is the great both and.
Oh, yeah. I think when God wasn't in the thunder, God wasn't in the lightning, God was in that little whisper.
Mm-hmm. And at least in that situation. But in other moments of scripture, he is in the thunder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jesus' baptism. Absolutely. The voice of the Father was thundered.
Oh,
it thundered down. It wasn't a whisper on that day. So, again, it's both and.
Yeah.
You know, and John looks up in Revelation chapter 11 and sees the ark. It's peals of thunder.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a whisper on that day. So mm-hmm. some days it's a whisper.
Yep.
Some days it's a thunder.
Some days I've had both.
It's both and. Yeah, absolutely.
You got to roll the punches. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yours was almost a whisper. Your conversion.
Yes, yes.
Because it was the internal that you started to recognize that, we're all nothing in the sight of God.
Mm-hmm.
And to receive Him worthily, we have to prepare ourselves. I remember back when I was a young boy, my mother was a Greek Orthodox, and she would prepare for weeks
mm-hmm.
before receiving Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, they've shortened that now, too. But even our Catholicism used to be fasting for 3 hours. And we've
mm-hmm. I had... two people come in the church 2 years ago. They're in their late 80s. Husband and wife, Reformed Protestants, their whole lives, active in their churches. And he was explaining how, in his church growing up, how they prepared for the Lord's Supper, which wasn't even a sacrament
right.
in the Reformed Church.
Yeah.
But an entire week of scrutinizing their life and reconciling with their neighbor before they were ready for the Lord's Supper. And I remember him sharing that in RCI, an 80-year-old man.
Yeah.
And I was floored. And I thought, man, if Catholics, Catholic.
They became members of the Catholic Church.
They did.
You know, I recall what you've all heard, that when the one pastor said, a Protestant pastor said, if I believe what you Catholics believe about the Eucharist, I come up the center aisle on my belly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We don't see many belly people anymore in the Catholic Church. We've got to change that thinking.
We do.
Yeah.
Got to change that thinking about the Eucharist, because it is mm-hmm. a source and summon our faith. And again, when you're not pouring out of the pew every Sunday,
mm-hmm.
I give you credit for that, because, it's important that we recognize our sinfulness before the Lord.
Oh, I remember Michael in high school after this conversion happened. He'd walk up in a school mass and get on his knees and receive our Lord. He's the only one. With a student body of 200 and some students, Michael walked up, got on his knees, and received our Lord.
I'm going to go back to that too, because you know we live.
It was awesome.
It is awesome because we live in a world of peer pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that had to be that's countercultural for what you did.
Yeah.
How did your buddies relate to you on that?
I mean, yeah, like it's like when I didn't go up. Because, you know, I was, you know, what did you do last night? You know, what are you up to? Stuff like that, ribbing me a little bit. But, yeah, I just, it came down, where's my God at? You know, is it in my friends or is it in the tabernacle? Yeah. Is it on the altar? And, you know, the more you do it, the easier it gets to habituate yourself just to do those sorts of things.
Were you able to become an apologist at that point a little bit and explain your position?
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun in high school talking with a lot of my friends. You know, they'd always come up to me, ask questions about the faith. And, yeah. And even like this past year I worked in a factory third shift at Herman Miller for 5 months. I worked in a warehouse. KL, now I work for the City of Muskegon, the Parks Department. And just to interact with, you know, I don't meet a lot of, I don't meet a lot of Catholics. I've met people from all walks of life, you know, Protestants, Orthodox, Wiccan priests, you know, Muslims, all sorts of people. And to be able to share the church with all people from walks of life, I think it's been very influential in my formation.
Yeah.
And I hope I can carry that into the priesthood to really be all things for all people.
Yeah. And I think it's important that we're able to articulate our faith and defend our faith. I mean, I have to tell you, when I first was ordained a deacon, I had a lot of my buddies going, you got to be kidding me. You? I mean, I'm like you a little bit, Mike. I look at my past, and it certainly seemed to would have disqualified me for the ordination. But the Lord had other plans for me.
Yeah.
And somewhere you find the inner strength to say, you know what? I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Lord is calling me to this. And that's what happened with you, Michael, is that you find that inner strength and the inner peace.
Oh, yeah.
To say, you know what? This is important because I need to say yes to him, at least make the attempt at what he's calling me to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a professor tell me, God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. You know, and that's, you know, I take great hope in that, you know, because I have failings and parts of the priesthood scare me. But, you know, as I get closer to that 7-year, you know, date, you know, I trust that God will form me and prepare me if this is what he's calling me to do.
12 guys come to mind for me right now who weren't very qualified. You know, fishermen.
Yeah. Only 11 made it.
Only 11 made it. We had to find the 12th again.
Yeah, and Jesus is God.
That's right.
They didn't all make it.
Yeah, so, you know, I think about that and how unqualified they were in this mm-hmm. calling. And all he said was, follow me.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Just follow me because I teach you.
Yeah.
So going back to the seminary, because this is important too, and this is really the crux of your journey. God's bringing you to this beautiful vocation. At least he's leading you into mm-hmm. this beautiful vocation. What does it look like the first year? Do you have any, have they given you an idea?
Yeah, so they called the first year. So originally when the seminary was founded, they only had 6-year formation.
Okay.
But they added this seventh year and they call it the year of spirituality. It's not super heavy on the academics. It's mainly, you know, for a lot of prayer, a lot of discernment, is this what God is calling me to do?
Okay.
So yeah, it's going to be a lot of that, a lot of retreats. Again, we have one priest there specifically devoted to forming us first years. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of interior reflection. And
will this be a continue on your education towards your degree, the first year, or a different degree?
So it's Our Lady of Guadalupe is. It's only 20 years old, at least in Nebraska. It's technically an uncredited institution, so I won't be awarded. I'll get the FR, I won't get an MDiv. But, so it's a little different. Unfortunately, all my studies at Benedictine don't transfer over.
Okay.
I'm kind of starting from scratch, which, you know, I'm okay with. It's just as much of a spiritual and a human formation as it is an academic formation. And they want all their priests to have the fullness of the what they do at the seminary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's the goal. The fraternity preserves the liturgical, doctrinal, and disciplinary traditions of the Roman Catholic Church, but its number one mission is the sanctification of priests. And it takes that very seriously. Yeah.
Okay. So that'll be your first year, really, really trying to discern God's will for you.
Yeah,
and studying on other studies going on.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be we have intro to philosophy. We have a intro to sacred scripture that's taught by a parishioner at Sacred Heart.
Really,
Dr. Schmidtke. He flies out every other week to the seminary in Nebraska.
Oh my!
And he'll teach every day, and then he'll come home, and then he'll go back, and Yeah, so that's been also nice to talk to him. And
inside. You got a little camaraderie already.
Yeah, precisely.
Knowing him.
Yeah.
Do you know how many young men will be in your group?
If I had to say from the retreat, I'd say there's going to be about 20 in my class.
And how many are there right now?
It's about 80 seminarians. Okay. They just ordained 11 priests, which I think was a record for the mm-hmm. at least for the American. There's two seminaries for the fraternities. There's one in Vygotsky in Bavaria, and there's the one in Nebraska.
Okay,
but yeah, there'll be about 80 seminarians there.
So you'd be living in community, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you have single rooms, shared rooms? You know,
they make it a point to have every seminarian his own room.
Okay,
because you spend so much time in community with your brothers that they want you to have that time for yourself.
Yeah.
In there. And then even, and they try to, it's not an order per se, it's a society of apostolic life. Okay. So even when you get ordained and you get assigned a parish, the ideal is to have three priests at every parish.
Yeah.
So you maintain that community life, even in miniature. So you still come together, eat together, pray the hours, or at least some of the hours together. Yeah.
You know, that is so important because one of the things that most young priests aren't ready for is the loneliness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's tantamount to a failure at many times because, you know, they just aren't prepared. They've come out of family life with their own families. They've been in seminary where they've been community together, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they're put into the world, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they're alone. So I think it's very important that they do that.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, yeah.
Yeah, because you're used to family life.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know, and you're used to camaraderie and all that.
Yeah.
And obviously, your dad, Mike's used to very family, you know.
I was up early this morning.
Were you?
Oh, yeah.
Pray be to God. How young is the youngest one?
She's 8 weeks.
Oh, my goodness. Well, congratulations, new daddy.
Yeah.
That's a son's daughter, how many?
I have one boy, and then we had four girls in a row.
Wow.
So.
Lord's got great plans.
A lot of wives.
And a lot of weddings. if that's what Lord's going
to. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm going to go back to Michael again, because the seminary really is the crux of what we're talking about here in your journey on seminary. After the first year, you'll probably go through scrutinies, I'm sure, during the time.
Yeah, I have to be, at the end of my first year, I still have to be approved by the fraternity, the council members on the fraternity.
Okay.
So it's not a guarantee that I make it, even if I'm there for the whole year, that I make it on to the second year. They could ask me to leave for whatever reason.
Okay.
But yeah, there's more reflection. I mean, I'll receive, in October of next year, if I'm still there, I'll receive clerical tonsure, so I'll be a cleric of the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And then once you reach that point, the drop-off rate greatly diminishes, and you can still leave, obviously, but it's more of an exception rather than the rule at that point. But,
okay.
But yes, most certainly. You're scrutinized each year.
Once you enter into it, can you come home? What's the rules for visitations or for people visiting you or you going home?
Yeah, now the first year is your plebe year. You know, I can't bring a cell phone my first year. I can't have any internet access. I can write letters. There's a landline that I can use to maybe call my parents once a week. But you're pretty isolated that first year. And then I stay there all the way till Christmas, and I celebrate Christmas with my brothers in the seminary. And then I can fly home for the day after, and I spend about 2 or 3 weeks home.
Okay.
And I go back, and then I celebrate Easter there, and then I go home for a week. And then I'm there all the way up till like the end of June, and then I come home for 8 weeks in the summertime. And that's really how it'll operate each year I'm in there. You'll spend, your summer, you get 8 weeks in the summer, and you spend 4 weeks at a parish somewhere in the fraternity. Yep.
So you're prepared.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I have a very close relationship with my little sister. You know, I love her dearly, and we have just the greatest times together.
Yeah.
And it was hard leaving school, but at least she could call me there. You know,
St. Augustine and St. Monica had that beautiful relationship. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's going to be that'll be definitely a challenge. But please keep my sister in your prayers, because it's going to definitely be hard on her. But
what's her first name?
Molly Coy.
Molly, we'll keep her in our prayers.
Yeah, most certainly. Like I said, I love her to death. That'll be definitely be a challenge.
But. Well, you know, if your love for her is that great, I'm sure she has love for you, and because of that, she'll want the best for you.
Yeah.
Molly wants what the Lord wants for your life too. That's important.
Yeah.
Mike, going back to Mike, when you hear this type of journey from a young man who's preparing himself for that, this must give you catalyst and be able to bring this journey to other people in his journey, because, you know, there's something special about this.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited for him. Yeah. I'm excited for him because I think he's following God's will. And anytime you follow God's will and do what God's asking you to do, you don't lose.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's a part of this story. And I remember the night he came to my house and said, you know, I dropped out of school and I'm going to enter the seminary with the priestly fraternity of St. Pius X, which is in an irregular situation mm-hmm. with the church. And, he asked me what I thought. And I looked him in the eye and I said, it's not God's will. And I'm not giving you my blessing. And he just looked at me, you know, and we had a 3-hour conversation, some of it very lively and intense, you know, but it kind of came to this conclusion where I remember looking at Michael and I said, you know, Archbishop Lefebvre, who died excommunicated, by the way, I said, where was his trust in his father? Mm-hmm. I just want you to think about that. And, you know, that had its own, and I had mm-hmm. no idea. I taught Michael. He was involved in the ministry team. We had a good relationship because he came to me to talk about this and he was discerning it. But until I read his biography, I had no idea the depth. You know, so for him to take that conversation, which was very lively mm-hmm. and intense, and another radio show, to go back and reflect, to pray, to dig in, mm-hmm. you know, not to have his and to come to the conclusion that to remain in the church is better than to put yourself in a situation that may not be resolved in our lifetime.
Right.
And to remain in the church is more important, to remain with Christ, even when we look across the landscape of the church. And the church is just a big boat. Mm-hmm. It's not a paradigm. It's not a program. It's a boat. And at times it feels like it's taken in water, but it's a boat and mm-hmm. it doesn't sink. Mm-hmm. And we're called to stay in it. And some of the things we wish we would work out tomorrow, God's in control.
Yeah.
Stay in the boat.
Yeah.
Stay in the boat. And the priestly fraternity, St. Peter, mm-hmm. it was founded because those men that mm-hmm. went through that crisis, They wanted to stay in the boat. Mm-hmm. They knew what happened was wrong, and mm-hmm. they wanted to stay close to their father.
Yeah.
And for John Paul II, who's a saint, to found them, to give them an apostolic life, and to see their charism as something good for the church, the sanctification of priests, is reaping its own benefit. Mm-hmm. And they have that wealth. They have those men attracted to it because there's that rich fidelity. Mm-hmm. And so that aspect of Michael, that's one of his great qualities. He's a searcher of truth. That is exciting, Deacon.
What first drew you to this other location? What first drew you to this conversation?
Like I said, I was, you know, the sophomore year of down at Benedictine, I got involved in the Society of St. Pius X, and, you know, I kind of reached out to Tober and kind of, you know, let him know.
He calls me by my last name.
Yeah, so I can't stop, you know, I can't call him Mike, I don't know. But, I reached out to him, and, we just, you know, we got together. You know, I told him I was going to say I went to St. Margaret Mary's on Allendale for about 3 months, and so he was like, "Yeah, let's meet up. We'll smoke some pipe tobacco, and we'll get it worked out, or we'll just flesh out some of these conversations." Mm-hmm. And we did. And I came, you know, ready with my guns ablazing, and you know, and Tober. It was just, it definitely had a profound impact on me. Going back, it took about a month or two before I really started to have serious doubts about leaving the society. I remember it's been about, last year, right around this time was my last mass attending at the society chapel. And I remember specifically the priest, I don't know if you recall from last summer, they were talking about reconciliation and the mm-hmm. talks kind of fell through, and the priest there got up and he was overjoyed that they had gotten away from these traps, you know, or whatnot, this ambush. And, he said something, and still he goes, I credit the Rosary Crusade with the society for thwarting these Roman plans. And just the fact that he said these Roman, I mean, what church are we part of? You know, if that sounds like something, you know, an Orthodox would say, or a Protestant schismatic would say, you know, these evil Romans.
Yeah.
And that, you know, once I heard that, you know, I stayed to the very end of the Roman canon, then I walked out of that church and I never returned, just because that deeply schismatic attitude I got from a lot of the people. And like I said, there's a lot of holy Catholics in that attend those chapels, a lot of holy priests. Mm-hmm. And it's a tragedy. You know, I got to listen to Father Bissig. He's the rector of the seminary at Our Lady of Guadalupe. And he was one of the eight priests who walked away. He was ordained in the Society of St. Pius X in 1977 and was, you know, a priest there for 11 years. And he said, you know, we felt like orphans without their father.
Yeah.
When Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre decided to go schismatic. It's a very tragic situation. But, I'm very grateful that he had the courage and the trust in divine providence to walk away and found the fraternity.
Yeah. You know, I know that many people can be very sincere in their beliefs, but they can also be sincerely wrong.
Sure.
And you know, that really is what, when we discern that way, mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. we find out that this is not what God is calling me to. Mm-hmm. And that's what you did, Michael.
Yeah.
You made that discernment. But I have to think walking away from that night with Tober and went, what in the heck did I go and see him for?
Oh, I know. Yeah. It definitely unsettled me. I remember going to Mass the next day at the Society in the morning and just, you know. Yeah, it was weighing on me. I tried to you know, shove it aside, but it was definitely welling up in me. And you know, we talked, we put back and forth on Facebook about multiple things.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, it got to yeah. He definitely lit a fire in me after that talk.
You know, what a better sign of a true friend that one is one that will not capitulate on the truth.
Oh, most certainly.
To make you feel good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Mike, that's what you did. I mean, you had a sincere conviction, and you were gracious enough and honest enough, and your friendship mattered enough that you spoke the truth in love.
Yeah, I've had multiple friends in my life get involved with the Society of St. Pius X. Almost all of them have eventually left the church altogether and became what's known as sede vacantis, or they don't believe there's a pope at all anymore.
Yeah.
And It's terrifying, you know. Mm-hmm. I've never had a friend get involved with it and keep a spirit of thinking with the church, a real spirit of thinking with the church. And so sometimes you know things by their fruit. That doesn't mean that God won't take that irregular mm-hmm. situation in His mm-hmm. good time and draw the good out of it. In some way, He did. In some way, the wisdom of St. John Paul II. He did do that with these priests that had enough courage back then to stand up and say, we want to keep this charism. We want to mm-hmm. keep this gift for the church. We want to offer the church. And certainly, you know, Pope Benedict XVI, who was part of that whole process when that historical situation frayed apart, mm-hmm. his gift of the motu proprio, Summorum Pontificum, was rooted in that experience for him. You know, the pain of watching someone be excommunicated.
Yeah.
And the pain of watching brother priests fall away, the pain of watching a small community of men be bold and do what they did to help the church heal itself mm-hmm. and get over some of the unfortunate divisions that have happened inside the church, I think was a great gift. Mm-hmm. Sacred Heart in some way kind of lives that gift out mm-hmm. because we have both the ordinary form of the Mass and we also have the extraordinary form. And for someone that goes there, to see that mutual enrichment happen, mm-hmm. that type of reconciliation happen among Catholics, it's very real. It's very palpable. It's very Catholic. In some ways, we're more diverse mm-hmm. than many parish. We're more diverse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's much more diversity, I think, in that regard. And that if it's Catholic, it's welcome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's a beautiful thing. That's a universal thing. So, you know, God bless Michael for doing
it. Now, Mike, are you attending Sacred Heart?
Yeah, I'm a parish member there, yeah.
Okay.
I have my, yeah, that's my parish official member there. I have my Muskegon parish that when I can't make it out there,
okay.
St. Mary of the Immaculate Conception, and they celebrate, they don't celebrate the Latin Mass, but Father Matt Barnum there is doing a fantastic job. He does more traditional Novus Ordo, you know, Ad Orientem, a lot of Latin in the Mass. And, you know, that's another thing. The fraternity only celebrates the Latin Mass, but everybody has a role to play right now. And it's not saying that tomorrow everybody's got to, you know, convert to the old Tridentine liturgy. No. Sacred Heart is doing God's work by doing both. You know, fraternity apostolates are doing theirs by just celebrating theirs. And St. Mary's is doing theirs in Muskegon. So everybody's got a role to play in this.
Yeah. Well, I would be remiss not mentioning my good friend, Father Robert Sirico.
Yes.
How important has he been in your journey?
Oh, I mean, I got to meet with him for, an hour and a half back in February. We talked about vocations and whatnot. He's such a great priest, such a fantastic priest. I'm so grateful for what he does at Sacred Heart, giving us the Mass of the Ages every Sunday. I mean, he's a great guy. We clashed a little bit. You know, he's a classically liberal, I think, would be a good way to describe Father Sirico. But he's a fantastic priest.
He's got a beautiful mind. Along with the Acton Institute and everything else he's doing. How was your relationship with the Padre?
I love working with Father Sirico. He's got a rich and acute pastoral sense about him. He's a profound listener. He's always aware, but he's not a micromanager.
Right.
But his pastoral wisdom is deep, and probably out of all the priests I've worked with in my 15 years in this diocese, I've learned the most from him in terms of approaching others, having wide open doors in the parish, and also a profound sense of evangelizing.
Yeah, wonderful.
He's always passionate about evangelizing. I think he and I really share that, that we need to continue to be going out, drawing others in, and allow the Eucharist and our celebration of it to be that rich catalyst in our life to go out and see others come into the church. So.
Well, the good news on this evangelization, I just had Annalise from the Diocese of Grand Rapids on. We were talking about a feasibility study that the diocese is going to be running on needing additional monies. And one of this is for seminarians. The other one is for advanced education for priests and seminarians. And the third one is for the retirement of the priests. But the crux of it is that, thanks be to God, the vocations are up. Mm-hmm. We're looking at 30-some men next year in vocations here in the diocese, which is powerful.
It is.
That men responding. You're one of them, Mike, because this is a time when I think sometimes when the church finds itself in some people jumping out of the boat a little bit is when more start jumping in and becoming leaders in our church. That's what we need, because we're seeing this influx of young men and women choosing vocations and religious life. And thanks be to God for that. Thank you to God for people like you who continue to carry the faith on in a faithful and ambitious manner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important.
It is.
We've only got about a minute or two left. Michael first. I'm going to go to Mike first. What would you tell young men or women listening today about listening to God's call?
I would tell them, don't ever abandon prayer.
Okay.
And I would say, every heart, every soul yearns for happiness. And you're only going to be truly happy knowing what God wants in your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in order to find out what that happiness is and how it's going to take shape here in the temporal realities we live in, is to run to Christ and find out what he wants of you.
Yeah.
And then do it. Don't worry about anything else. Just do it, and you'll be the happiest you'll ever be.
You make me think of Augustine's words, my heart is restless
until it rests in thee. Yeah.
And that's really what you're saying.
That really is it.
Michael, what would you be telling young men and women right now about discerning God's will?
Come to the Latin Mass. Well, I mean, like I said, my experience, that lit the fire of the vocation in my heart, and just to come to that spirituality and to enter into the sacrifice of the cross. That is our defining factor of our faith, is the extent to which we participate in his death and resurrection. And so I would encourage everybody who's discerning a religious vocation just to experience that this ancient rite of the church, and let yourself be formed by it. I mean, you don't have to enter a traditional order, but it's a good experience for every Catholic.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I want to thank both of you being here. I want to thank Michael Coy, who's be entering to seminary in the September.
September 6th,
Also, I want to thank Mike Tober, who's a DRE at Sacred Heart Parish. Thank you for this time together. It's really been beautiful to listen to this journey, and we're going to just ask for God's blessing upon you, Michael, that you'll continue to do the good work that he's planned for you, and that your journey will be one of a beautiful ending unto the priesthood. So thank you for both. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Deacon.
And this is Deacon Jim Thorne of Holy Family Radio saying thank you so much for listening, and may God bless.
To hear this episode of Living the Catholic Life again, visit us online at holyfamilyradio.net and click on Audio Archive under the Programming tab. Please remember to keep all of our priests in your prayers, and may God bless your day.